you so much. Welcome to the Long Shot. It is a podcast. I don't know. I'm just mixing it up.
Try new things.
Yeah. I am one of your hosts. My name is Sean Conroy. Also with me on the program, of course, the fantastic Amber Kenny is here.
Hello.
And I was running late today for no reason. Mostly because
not that late.
Well, a good 40 or 50 seconds at least.
Oh man. Oh wow.
I could tell you were fuming when we signed into the Zoom, but it was just that thing of like, you texted me and said, did you send a link? And I was like, oops, I was supposed to send a link.
I truly was asking because my inbox is so insane.
Oh,
I was
really?
Like, he may have set this early, and I, instead of spending a lot of time looking for it, like, I'm just going to ask if it exists or not. So it really wasn't me.
It did not exist. Yeah. I had not sent it yet. It's funny. I was just talking about that yesterday with one of my classes because, you know, I teach all these classes where they have to send homework in every week. And unless I very specifically explain, and I don't blame them for this, but unless I very specifically explain, like, please start a new thread that says Conroy homework week 4 or whatever, people will just like send their own emails in with a heading or tack it onto somebody else's. And it's like, if you guys knew what my inbox looked like, like, I just would never find that stuff.
Right.
You know? So I gave him a very specific format yesterday, or a couple days ago, I guess. I gave him a very specific format in which to send stuff in. And today I got one from somebody that was attempting to do that very specific format, but doing it completely wrong in a way that's
going to
confuse everybody and make it more difficult.
How was it wrong?
Well, my whole thing is like, for each class, they should have one thread for the entire, for every single person's homework. So that way I know, like, I have to go through and read every email on this thread that has an attachment that is the homework. And, you know, and this person very carefully labeled it, you know, Conroy week 4 homework, but put their own name at the beginning. So it's like Amber's week 4 homework. So I'm going to get like, either some people will tack it onto that and other people will go, oh, I guess we're supposed to put our own name.
Yeah.
And, you know, it definitely reminds me of back when I was teaching and you just had to be so
specific.
Yeah. Do you remember there was always that test that started with like, please follow all the directions to this test to the letter. And then the first one was number one, read all questions very carefully before you begin. Number two, how much is 6 times 4? Number three, who was the 14th president of the United States? Number four, and people would be like furiously answering. And then like number 11 would be like, please do not answer any of these questions and turn this over. And so anybody who didn't do number one and read all the way through, it was like a lesson in following directions, you know.
I guess. But like that's human beings skim. And so I could see someone being like, oh, the important thing is answering the questions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's
right. Well, that was the whole thing was like, guys, come on, man. We got to follow the directions. Otherwise, what's going to happen during a fire drill? People are going to be talking, you know?
Sure.
We won't know how to get out of the building because people will be busily whispering to each other, you know?
But fire drills, I would argue, have less of that, like, it's not trying to trick you. It is what it is.
Right. Yeah, I mean, certainly those fire drills we had where the teacher was trying to trick us, it was like, number one, follow all directions. Number two, walk towards the doorway. Number three, jump out the window. am I supposed to walk towards the doorway or jump out the window? Yeah.
this morning on our walk, Smudgy and I passed a really big apartment building, like one of those that's like spans a whole block and it's like three stories.
And it's not a mansion. It's like we're a bunch of different.
Yes, yes. It's definitely apartments. And the fire alarm was going off.
Oh.
And it was early in the morning. I was like, oh, man, that's a bummer. But then I realized that there was maybe five people standing outside the door. Like, the math wasn't mathing. Like, there were so many more residences than people standing outside. So I was like, are people just in there with the fire alarm going off? Yeah. Or maybe there's a back exit or something. But it I thought that was interesting.
I do feel like there are places, and I think this, where I live, is one of them, where, well, a couple things. Because first of all, where I live, they always send out a flyer that says, we're going to be testing the fire alarm, and you know ahead of time. And then it just rings for like 4 hours and you're like, you know, but then there's also places where it goes off by accident on enough of a regular basis that people are like, that's probably nothing. I'm going to keep watching reality television. I love reality television.
It was loud though. I mean, Smudgy and I heard it, you know, a street
That's a
away.
Good fire alarm, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Loud is loud.
Unless it was more outside than inside.
Right. It only blares outside. Yeah. Like, it's telling like, people to stay away.
Yeah.
It's not getting anybody out.
Mm-hmm.
So people who follow this program may know that last week Amber and I met in person at the beautiful All Things Comedy Studios.
It is gorgeous.
Yeah.
I was really blown nice. Away.
Really nice. And they have a beautiful three-camera setup for us. And we recorded an episode there, which was a lot of fun to do and something we had not done in quite some time. So that posted to YouTube this week on the Long Shots video channel.
Which is called Sean Conroy Gets Out. It's a subsidiary.
Yeah. But I, we got a bunch of comments. And I get so excited when I read these comments from people. Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's like, yeah, it's like lifting something too hot, you know? Like, I'm just like, you know me well. You know how I act when I get excited. So I just wanted to read some of these comments because it's so nice that people go out of their way. And some of them, they really go out of their way. Like, some of them are, you know, what you might expect, because we've had some difficulties the last few weeks understanding what people were saying about Oprah Dine versus Oprah
we,
Din.
We got there, though. We got there.
Yeah, we did.
It took arguably too long, but we got there.
We needed Aaron's help. Okay, so here's the first comment. This is from Jamie Kaplan, and it says, love this.
Aww.
Yeah, and I assume that's because we were in a new space with new
cameras and
equipment.
Lights.
Yeah, yeah. Although I will say we were, and I think you actually commented on this during the episode, but we were very shiny. We were shiny in our.
I know. I was like, I need to bring hair and makeup with me next time.
Yeah, like some powder and, you know. I feel like I may be losing my hair, so this part of my head is getting larger and larger. And by the way, this is available as advertising space if anybody would like to. okay. Second one is from Brian Palm, who said, so the first one was love this. Second one is from Brian, who says, yay, love it. So
great.
There's a lot of love to go around.
That's very sweet.
Mm-hmm. And the third is from Maria, who says, I love.
Aw, we don't know what, though.
No, it could have been in reference to just her way of moving through the world.
Yeah, that's great. Know? It's great to come from love instead of fear.
Either way, if it's about us, fantastic. And if it's about, you know, just humanity and life in general, that's also amazing.
Great.
And
love
and
is
wonderful.
Wonderful.
Love is love is love is love. okay. Next one is from How to Fold Soup 2. Still have not heard from How to Fold Soup 1. Still looking for that. But How to Fold Soup 2 says, Johnny Dollar, as in yours truly, Johnny Dollar, was a radio program in the 40s and 50s, which followed an insurance investigator. One of the narrative elements of the serial was the itemization of the expenses incurred while investigating the claim, which would be used for exposition and episode recaps and were ended with yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Noiri, always a female love interest who often was involved with the crime slash fraud. He may also have been a blues singer, but the video game title referenced was in line with one of their episode titles. I say it was online with one of their episode titles.
And this has become a Oprah Din describing podcast.
Yes. It's just about obscure video games and radio programs from the
1940s. This is like episode 3 or 4 of talking about it. And it's a video game I have not played. Have you played it?
I have not. No. Oprah Din. No, I have not played it. I also think it's hilarious that somebody in the 1940s was like, say, fellas, what do you say we do a radio program about an insurance investigator? And the way he solves crimes is he always has an itemization of what they paid for with the insurance money. And I mean, like, anyway,
I know what you're saying, but I do think that's kind of an interesting narrative tool that, like, I guess I'm not sure. I'm guessing, like, either he lists the items at the top and you have to learn what they mean later, or I don't know. It could be interesting.
An itemization of the expenses incurred while investigating the claim, which would be used for exposition and episode recaps. Oh, I see.
So it wasn't necessarily, like,
it wasn't
four
how they
shots
solved
of
it.
Whiskey.
Right, yeah. Right. It wasn't how they solved it. It was like, first I walked into the bar and I bought 4 shots of whiskey, which I paid $1.25 for each. Then I went to the jukebox and I have a receipt that says it cost me $1 to get a song by Benny Goodman and
really
the Swing Orchestra.
That's really expensive in the 40s. That is really expensive.
I got to play 52 songs for $1. So, I'm sure there's a way. And also, you know, it is a noir thing. And the classic, I think the classic noir movie is Double Indemnity, which is all about an insurance scheme. So I'm sure there's some kind of connection to all of that.
Not in the 40s, but now I feel like there's police aren't necessarily as seen as heroes as much in our society as they once were. Mm-hmm. So it's a way to do like a detective story without including police officers.
So you're viewing the 1940s program about an insurance investigator through the eyes of the Black Lives Matter movement.
Correct.
And defund the police.
Right. I said at the top that it didn't count for the 1940s, but it's...
Right. So it would be okay to listen to it now and you wouldn't be grinding your teeth the whole time going...
Well, like, did you watch Poker Face?
I watched the pilot. I still haven't seen
it's a similar thing where it's like, oh, they figured out a way to do a detective story without there being police involved. Like, she's not a detective. She's not.
Right. Yeah. Although I will say that was something I always loved was detective fiction that wasn't necessarily police related.
Right, right, right. Like Private Eye.
Yeah. Like Hercule Poirot or Sam Spade.
Oh,
the Hardy
Sherlock
Boys.
Holmes? Come on, Sherlock
I don't know who
Holmes.
That is.
Oh, sure.
Sherlock Holmes and the Oprah Dine.
Encyclopedia Brown.
Oh, I loved Encyclopedia Brown.
Me too.
Dogs are colorblind. there was always some scientific fact that got him. Okay, the next one is from Merrick 888. I don't know if that person is related to the Elephant Man. Anything's possible. I haven't watched or listened in a few years. I know Jamie is busy, but has he not been able to come on the show this long? And is there any news about Joe, or are Amber and Sean the show now?
I think we're the show, baby.
Jamie is busy. He's running Dynasty Typewriter. Also,
and he'll Dynasty pop Co- in and do like a fun special co-star cameo every once in a while.
You're really pushing the definition of the word fun, but yes.
But he's not regular cast. It's like, it's a walk-on on SNL.
Right. It's sort of like when Eddie Murphy showed up at the 40th anniversary of SNL.
Yes.
That's Jamie. Jamie is the Eddie Murphy of this show.
And I have not had any news from Joe. Have you? I was thinking about reaching out to him.
Mm-hmm. What's the last we know about Joe's whereabouts? Do we need to hire an insurance investigator
yes.
to figure out what's going on with Joe? Last we heard, he was in Phoenix with his mother and his aunt. But we have not heard from him in quite some time. Joe, if you're listening, first of all, check out the video game Oprah Din. And also, please text us and let us know your whereabouts and what's new. Here's one from Rob, which says, thank you for getting my name right. Yes, I am commenting as we go. This is Rob Scheimer, I think, who usually has left like two or three comments over the course of the because I think Rob is writing as he's listening and watching.
Sure. Yeah. It's like it's a relationship. But
we are in a relationship with Rob. Yes.
But is he impressed that you got Rob right, or is it the Scheimer part?
I don't know. I mean, maybe this is a reference to my constant Starbucks irritation. I'm not sure. But,
or maybe people always say Shiner, like they assume what it is.
Or Robe, like they think he's a article.
So now we are saying it wrong. So sorry.
So this next one is from Robe. And Robe says, thank you for getting my name right. Yes, I am commenting as we go. Flavor Flav wears a clock. Sean talked about carrying a clock. Okay, so that was a Flavor Flav reference in the comments that I didn't understand, and it was because I myself said something about Flavor Flav. Sean mentioned being at a store with a huge line and seeing two people that work there not working a register. I think those two did not work at the store. That was where he was saying there's people there setting up displays, and maybe those people did not work.
Right. Like it's like an outside vendor. They're not.
Right. They're like, let's put the motor oil in aisle 7, but I ain't going on the cash register. That's always how they sound. And then you can tell that Rob writes as we go, because the next comment is from Rob as well. Rob says, you know Fibber McGee, but not Johnny Dollar. Wow. So he's not wrong about that. Fibber McGee goes all the way back to the 1930s. Johnny Dollar is 40s and 50s. I mean, Fibber McGee ran from, I think, the 1930s to the late 1950s. And then there was actually a television program with Fibber McGee on it. And it was Fibber McGee and Molly was his wife, and they were just a hapless couple, firmly ensconced in the travails of the difficulties of marriage. Which
is that the one where the closet always falls
the
on
the closet
them?
Was full of stuff, and they would go to open the closet and a bunch of stuff would fall out. And that was Fibber McGee's closet. But here's a thing is that I looked up when I was reading this comment about Johnny Dollar, I looked up like radio programs of the 1940s, whatever it was. It was crazy to me how many shows there were and how many of them I had never heard of. You know, not that I was around then, but like,
well, because it was probably like 24-hour programming.
Right. It was like that was what everybody did was listen to the radio. I mean, that's why I know Fibber McGee is because when I was a kid, my father, who had loved the radio when he was young, loved to get like cassette tapes of various radio programs. So Fibber McGee was one that he got for us, and we listened to that, and Selling Sunset, which is a reality radio program about a group of very attractive women who work in a real estate office and fight with each other about nothing on a regular basis. Okay, next one is from Green Apple Cat, which is our friend Scott down in Australia, down under. I have a student in my class now who is from New Zealand, and literally every week when we show up in class, I'm like, how's it going down under? Oh, wait, nope, sorry, that's not, like, I keep forgetting that New Zealand is not, okay.
Wait, so New Zealand isn't down under?
I don't think so. I think New Zealand, like, I think down under is just Australia.
Okay.
I come from a land, like, when he goes, I come from a land down under, he's not like, I come from either Australia or New Zealand, or maybe...
But Australia, is it New Zealand even more down under, or do I have the geography completely wrong?
I couldn't tell you. I'm not sure exactly New Zealand's relationship with Australia.
But what I mean is it is down under the other continent.
And what I'm saying is I am not sure that that is the case. I don't know.
You think it's floating up above?
I think it's in that general vicinity, but I do not know particularly specifically where it is. So you're saying... that really what New Zealand is down under, down under.
Or we are so stupid. Even if it's above Australia, it's still down under.
What is it under?
Other continents.
If you look at the Mercator projection.
Well, what are we?
It's very oriented towards Western civilization.
Yes.
And none of the countries are represented accurately so that it looks like some other countries are the wrong size.
I agree 100%.
Yeah.
What is down under in reference to for Australia?
I thought it meant that it was a few inches underwater. Okay. No. I thought it was sinking. Like, I thought Australia was the next Atlantis, basically.
Okay.
So... Green Apple Cat says, a jet engine is a type of reaction engine discharging a fast-moving jet of heated gas, usually air, that generates thrust by jet propulsion. While this broad definition may include rocket, water jet, and hybrid propulsion, the term jet engine typically refers to an internal combustion air-breathing jet engine, such as a turbojet, turbofan, ramjet, or pulse jet. Now, my sense of that is that that's not something... Scott just wrote off the top of his head.
No, we must have said something about jet engines.
But also that he just cut and pasted a definition.
Sure. Yeah.
The comment section.
Yeah. There's some Wikipedia happening.
If you could next week explain that, please, Scott. And also please explain the distinction between Australia and New Zealand in terms of how far either of them is underwater and why.
And... annotate, like, cite your sources.
Oh, right. Was that from Roger's Thesaurus or Merriam-Webster Dictionary or Claude's Handbook of Various Engines? Whatever the quote was, please. We don't want to get in trouble for plagiarizing your comment. Stephen Scott writes... hell or high water, you guys have been the most consistent thing in my life for a while now. I look forward to the program every week, and you guys have brought me a lot of joy. Just wanted to say thank you.
Wow.
Yeah. Things like that are very, like, I love hearing stuff like that, you know?
It sounds like they have a very chaotic life, though, if we're the most consistent thing. So hang in there, buddy.
Right. Like, he's living like the Incredible Hulk. He's just on the road all the time. Like hitchhiking. Which, be careful, because who knows who's going to pick you up. A lot of times it's a serial killer.
That's a myth.
Excuse me?
That's a myth.
I don't think so.
It is.
Really? Okay. The next one, this is a long one. It's from Cassine C, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. Cassine C. Here's what it says. The first time I listened to the Long Shot podcast, it was the episode Eddie was talking about how he's trying to be a vegan, but subsequently said he ate a cream cheese bagel, and everyone was like, wait, that's not being vegan.
That I remember nearly that.
Killed me. I remember that too, and that's got to be like 12 years ago at this point.
Yeah. Well, it's just so Eddie in a nutshell.
I was trying to explain that because I was telling somebody about this comment and like they were just like, oh, so you guys all attacked him for something? And I was like, wait a minute. What you have to understand is the way he would present himself as a vegan
is like, I'm better than you guys.
Correct. It was always about being far superior to everybody. And that was true of most of the characteristics he presented himself as having, like, He had dogs, which made him superior to regular people who didn't have dogs.
He didn't even have dogs when he was on the podcast.
I thought he had, didn't he have like Gunther and Flardo and
there was like 11 cats.
Jimmy Hoffa and Nancy Reagan. There was just a bunch of whatever. He had animals and he was, that made him superior, and being vegan made him superior.
Koju or something.
Hoju, yeah. Gojo. Yeah. But yeah, so it was always about, I'm better than you because of this. And then he would instantly contradict himself. So that was what was so funny about it, was like, I'm better than you guys because I'm a vegan. What'd you have for breakfast this morning? Cream cheese bagel. You know? So anyway.
Well, and also the comedy came because he would laugh too. Like,
right. He was aware. He was very self-aware.
It didn't seem attacky, but what I was going to say is the exact opposite of what was funny was how unaware he was, because he wasn't cagey about saying he had a cream cheese bagel. Right. The breath after saying he was vegan, like he had two realities running. And
he was unself-aware until we made him aware, at which point he was self-aware.
Yes.
And not upset about it. I listened to that episode another 5 times before I realized there were more episodes on the Apple Podcast app. Again, we were doing a great job of advertising the show. What if there's a lot of people who never figured out there was more episodes on the Apple Podcast app? They're just listening to one episode of The Long Shot over and over again. Oof. You guys have been there for me through all my nighters baking cakes. Baking is a side gig for me. I teach children with learning disabilities. When Jamie used to do his little nuggets / boba of wisdom, I felt like it directly applied to my life, even though it was 5 to 10 years back in time. So I guess this person must have come to the podcast more recently and been listening to old episodes, and Jamie would say his boba of wisdom. Oh,
God. I saw something somewhere. I should have written it down, but they were talking about a nugget of wisdom. And I was like, Jamie?
I wrote them down on Post-its, and I have them on my wall as a gentle reminder. My favorite one was actually without Jamie, but I think Sean was talking about Cobra Kai, and the sensei says, okay to lose to enemy, must not lose to fear, and that has been embedded in my mind with everything I do. Credit where credit is due. I don't think that was me. I think that was Joe, because I think I never watched Cobra Kai, but I remember Joe really advocating for that show and thinking it was good. So there you go. By the way, Joe, we have not heard from in a while. He is in, last we heard, okay.
He's down under.
He's down under Utah in Arizona. Wait, where is Utah? I listen to the older episodes in order, and I always think, oh, wow, I just graduated from high school in 2015, and this is where they're at. Yesterday, I was going through my baking ritual. Coffee machine on, podcast on, butter and milk out of the fridge. I guess butter and milk are for the baking, or the milk is for the coffee, the butter. Okay. And I did a double take when Amber said, "What do I do with my hands?" I ran to check the date of release, and it was May 17th. I had to check the year again. Oh, God, we are 2023, aren't we? It was a poignant moment because, number one, I'm so happy to have finally caught up, and you guys are planning T-shirts, too. So I'm definitely buying those. God damn it.
Those T-shirt meetings have been going great.
I don't know if we need to have three meetings a week about T-shirts, but so far I'm enjoying them. Number two, what on earth am I going to listen to when I have to pull all-nighters this weekend?
Just listen like to them over and over again.
Yeah, you can listen to each of them five times. I feel like a giant chapter of my life has ended, and I'm not sure what to do now. I did not know how much this podcast meant to me. Oh, that's very nice. The good news is I can go back and listen to the beginning all over again, yes, and now be up to date. It's funny, or no, I won't say it's funny, because Sean always says that's setting people up for an expectation. It's true. But even though you're all talking about recent events, be it political or plugs for shows, I have it in my head that these are years ago. It's like when Sean rants about how messed up the politics is, and I'm just mixing batter thinking, oh, that's okay. That was 5 years ago. The world is a better place now. And then I realize that was just 3 weeks ago. I really hope you guys do a live show somewhere sometime. I'm from Vancouver, and I would love to make a trip down to LA, haven't been there, to hear the actual chortles of Sean and Amber's infectious laughter. I love how much you guys are committed to keeping the podcast going, and I must say that the chemistry you guys have is impeccable. P.S. I wrote to Amber on Instagram under my baking account. This was before I knew how to even reach you guys. When I listened to the episode about how the checks were stolen from Sean's mailbox. But then I thought, why on earth did I think that was such a good thing to talk about? It is what it is. I hope this comment tops that little accidental stab on Instagram. You guys are amazing.
I don't even recall that.
You get so many things on Instagram no. about the time that the checks were stolen from my mailbox that you're like, ugh, I don't. Because that's all anybody wants to talk about is that stuff. No, that was, you know.
That was so sweet.
Yeah. Graduated from high school in 2015. So a young person, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they were, you know, taking a long time. Because some people, you know, it takes a while to get out of high school. But I'm assuming it was, and now they're baking and working with students with learning disabilities, which is great. Send us a picture of your put a picture on Instagram and tag us in it, Sean Conroy and Amber Kenny, of what you bake, like what's your baking stuff. But anyway, that was very nice. And then here's another one from that person who says, also just wanted to say that it is so entertaining watching the podcast on YouTube. It is actually quite a different experience from listening. Sean's facial expressions kills when he's bantering. Sidebar, Sean nearly killed me when he said, but he's the driver, when Amber talked about how Smudgy can't jump in the car. I was joking about how dogs can. I'm not going to lie. I do kill, generally speaking, with my facial expressions.
You're known for your really expressive face. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the last one is from Phil in Canada, our old pal Phil, who says, I love that the thumbnail this week is Amber in the Black Lodge. What's the Black Lodge? Is that a Twin Peaks reference, perhaps?
I don't know. I'm Googling as we
look
speak.
It up. I'm assuming that is because you were sitting in front of a red car. I actually meant to look this up.
Oh, it is Twin Peaks.
It is. It's the weird, dreamy sequence towards the end of Twin Peaks when it came out many, many years ago, where the person was speaking backwards and was like, by the way, that's another way that you can listen to this podcast is backwards. There's a lot of internal messages in there.
This is not the best, but bear with me.
Yes.
I'm going to share it.
Oh, are you able to do that?
No. The host disabled it.
Now you are.
Okay. Yeah, I see what he's talking about.
Oh, that's the Black Lodge. And
this is a bar in the style of the Black Lodge. That's what I mean by it not being the best.
I see.
But you get it. Because I had a red curtain, right. Black chair. Right. Got it.
So anyway, that's all our comments for this week. Thank you, everybody, for writing in. Please continue to do so. I enjoy them tremendously. And hopefully we can do another in-person show very soon and be in the Black Lodge. All right. We always start our show with a segment we like to call Checking In. So let's start today with Amber. Go ahead, Amber. What's going on? What's new? What's happening?
Yeah. I went for a meal. I had dinner with my good friends, Eric and Mary, who you know.
I know Eric and Mary.
And their two kids.
Don't know their kids. Don't care to.
Okay, great. And I haven't seen them in a while. I went to her birthday party in March. I think I mentioned it.
You talked about that on
the podcast. But, you know, she's the belle of the ball. It was her birthday. So I didn't get like a lot of one-on-one time with her. And so I was really excited about us going to dinner. And Jeff and I were a little bit like, oh, what's it going to be like at a restaurant with kids? Like, is this going to be awkward? Is it going to be uncomfortable? Is it going to be
the other table's going to be angry at our table because the kids are like coloring outside the lines on the placemats? Right.
And their kids now are 10 and 8. And so they. 18. There's two kids. And they're incredible. Like, I had such a good time with them. They're so smart and so outgoing and open and funny that it was like, it wasn't, I didn't have to be like patronizing of like, it was fun hanging out with you. Like, it was fun hanging out with them. They were like, I asked them how school was, which felt like a very, could have been a generic answer that's like fine and moving on. But they gave these like in-depth answers. And the oldest is 10 and is in fourth grade, is about to finish fourth grade. And so I was like, oh, you're learning division, cursive. I feel like I learned those in fourth grade. And he's like, I learned those last year. And I was
I was in second when I learned those. I don't know what you're talking about.
Sorry. And and then, but he's like, I did have to watch that puberty video.
Oh, boy.
I was like, oh, we're getting right into it. Like, this is what I first set down. So that was a lot of fun. And the younger one was like, I'm in second grade. It's easy. It's so easy. These guys are great. And they're giving honest movie reviews and pointing out plot holes. Like, they were great. It was really, really fun. And
like, to what were they like, get why Bruce Willis the whole time, he's never talking to anybody but the kid. And like, how did people not know that he was a ghost the whole time?
Well, Eric was talking about showing them a lot of the movies that he was a fan of as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time they're like, what is this? And
Double
not
Indemnity. He's like, kids, this is about an insurance investigator who itemizes everything. And that's how the narration is.
But not in like a, oh, this is old and this is bad. But they were talking about Neverending Story. And I was like, oh, did you guys like it? And he was like, it made no sense. Like, there was plot holes everywhere. And Eric was like, he's right. Rewatching it, it's like vignettes that don't seem to even really be connected to each other. And I don't know. I just think it's really interesting for a 10-year-old to understand narrative arc so well. And
what is the big deal? So he had a sled when he was a kid. Who doesn't have a sled? Plot hole.
And he was saying that they are watching The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Which one?
There's two movies. And that
there's also two TV shows, I think.
Oh, I don't know. But mm-hmm. but Riker was like, oh, I get it. The first one's like Nazism and the second one is like communism. And it's like, what? This kid is so crazy. I love it. But yeah. And I
still didn't get that from, I mean, I'm still like, oh my gosh, they went into a wardrobe and there's a whole world in there. Like, what are you talking about? Nazism and communism.
It's a lion.
Yeah. And a witch. And they're in a wardrobe.
And I was able to make them laugh a lot, which was really fun. I don't know. I just had a really good time and I want
to
hang out
with them. The witch loves Turkish Delight, which is a reference to Erdogan's overtaking of the election last week. Ugh. You know, that book was written 100 years ago, right?
And they have like a family dance party every night, which I feel like sounds so fun. So I was like, what's your jam? Like, what's your go-to that you must dance to? And they're like, Welcome to the Jungle and Barbie Girl. Okay, I'm not really seeing a through line, but I love it.
Yeah, I would not be able to probably do a lot of dancing to either of those. They're not, they're not my.
What's your go-to dance jam?
I would say Patience. By Guns N' Roses.
So you still like Guns N' Roses?
Yeah, still Guns N' Roses.
It's just a different one.
And G.I. Joe by Aqua. Just different doll, same group.
So funny.
Raggedy Ann. Yeah, so they were fun to hang out with. Now, does this
they were
make
so
you,
fun.
Yeah, does this make you want to hang out with those with kids that age more?
Yeah. Or at least those specific kids. I don't know if all kids are.
Yeah, I don't think so. Because I think there's some kids that are just like.
That suck.
Pieces of shit. Let's be honest. Some kids are just pieces of shit. You know, there's no getting around it. Well it's also funny. It's also funny to think about. Like, so they have this dance party every night.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you have to figure somebody is going to be like, I don't think I want to do this anymore.
Well, well, that's what like, Mary was
like,
saying.
Riker's
like,
going to be like 34, and he's going to be like, can we not have a dance party tonight? I'm thinking.
Well, that's what Mary was saying. She's like, we're in like a sweet spot where they're really fun to hang out with, and they like us still. And she's like, I know that won't be forever, so I'm really trying to.
He's going to go from watching the puberty video to being the puberty video, and it's going to be uncomfortable for everybody.
So yeah, that's my checking in.
What did you have for dinner?
We had Mediterranean food. Oh, that was the other thing.
Healthiest diet by far.
We were looking at the menus, and I wasn't a kid like this, but most kids, like, you're like, oh, like, you want the French fries with the chicken nuggets, you know, like, and
hot dog. Do they have hot dogs? Mediterranean hot dogs.
Mediterranean hot dogs. But he was like, "I'll have the steak plate," and the other guy's like, "I want the grilled sandwich, grilled salmon plate." I was like, "Surf and turf over here."
Right. So they had expanded their tastes by that.
Yes.
Yeah, that was not a. Not a quality I had as a child and barely a quality I have as an adult. No, not picky, just not exposed to anything.
Ah.
So that, you know, because still to this day, my parents are like, are we having Italian or Mexican? Like, that's it, you know. Mm-hmm. As far as they're concerned, that's the only foods
cuisine.
There are. Yeah. I'm like, what if we had sushi? And they both faint. Yeah, they both faint. So I try not to bring it up that often. All right. So here's my, I don't have a lot for this, but, I will say, I am in the midst of starting another podcast. It has not come out yet, but, I am recording some episodes with my good friend Andy Secunda, and it is focused on the idea of pilots, like television pilots. We'll watch pilots and discuss them, because Andy is a very accomplished television writer. He created the first show I ever worked on, and he's done a lot of things since then, and eventually was an executive producer on a show called The Goldbergs, a very popular sitcom on ABC, I believe, or CBS or NBC,
whatever,
or maybe the UPN network,
MTV,
CW. Yeah, it was whatever it was. It was a network sitcom,
Home Shopping Network. Yeah.
So he and I have always had an affinity for discussing television programs. So we're doing this podcast, and I say all this by way of saying, first of all, you know, be ready when the show actually starts coming out in 6 months to listen to it. Mm-hmm. But we also, for a variety of reasons, I watched for the umpteenth time the pilot of a show on one of the streaming services. I forget if it was Paramount Plus or Netflix or...
Oh, no. Places to be.
Could have been on Pluto TV or Roku, but a show called Pen 15.
Oh, yes.
And I don't know if you've ever watched Pen
15. I have watched it.
But it is so well done. Like,
it's so good.
I've watched it, like I said, a couple times. And every time I'm just struck by the quality of both the writing and the acting in the show. Mm-hmm. It's and it's very, very specific. I mean, it's you know, it starts in the year 2000, and it's two girls going into seventh grade for the very first day of seventh grade, which is why, you know, starting seventh grade as a girl in the year 2000 is exactly why I find it so
right.
Relatable.
You're like, oh my gosh,
100% identify with
me too. Me too. Me too.
This was my experience as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched, and this happens sometimes when I watch pilots of shows that I have seen before that I really like, is then I can't stop. I'll just keep watching episodes of the show. So I basically watched all of season one of that show, and I was like, this show. So anyway, if anybody has not seen Pen 15, I highly, highly recommend it.
I agree. And I wanted to say too, to add to that, it's very well done in the sense that it is very, very funny, mm-hmm. but it's also like heart wrenching.
Well, like, I said that to somebody the other day. I was like, this show is so funny, but there's always at least one moment in the show where I'm about to burst into tears. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's just heartbreaking. And I think that's why I find it so, why compelling. I so identify as a 12-year-old girl from 2000, like a 12-year-old millennial girl, because it's such a relatable mindset. It's not necessarily, it's just the human condition, you know, like they feel weird. They feel uncomfortable with who they are in the world of seventh grade. And that feels so relatable to me in seventh grade. And even on this podcast, I'm like, I don't belong here. You know,
who does? I'm
still doing this. But it is such an identifiable, and they do such a good job of being so specific about it. I mean, this is another thing I was talking about with somebody the other day, is the difference between a network show versus Hulu. They could do something that's weird and uncomfortable. Right.
And it's not going to get noted disturbing. Into a totally different.
Right. And you know, the two things I will also say, one thing is the reason it's called Pen 15 is because that's a way to write penis without actually writing penis, which I never knew that when I, like, you know, there's like certain things as a kid where you're like, this is something that I did too. Uh-huh. And I didn't realize that was why they called it that until after I'd watched a couple of episodes. And I was like, I think somebody had to tell me that was why, because they never explained it in the show. And they're like, oh yeah, it says, you know, and I was like, why were they not just writing?
Cause you're 12 and it's
seventh
like
grade.
You'll spontaneously.
Right.
go up in flames.
But here's the other thing. The first time I ever heard about the show, I don't remember exactly how it was, but it was, I was listening to, I think it was NPR or maybe K-Rock or...
No. Fibber McGee.
What's yours truly, Johnny Dollar? No, it was an NPR story about the show, and I feel like, I can't prove this, but I feel like they got it a little bit wrong, because the way they described it was, it's two women in their 30s going back to seventh grade and spending time with all these seventh graders and whatever. And it was just a, I heard that and I was like, what the fuck are they talking about? Like,
yeah.
But the reality of the show is that the women who created the show play themselves at the age of 12. Yeah. And they're both such amazing actresses that it completely works, even though it's weird to have two.
Well, and it's really funny because all of the other kids are actually.
They're both really kids.
And
yeah.
So it's funny. It is very funny.
It's the opposite of, you know, Dawson's Creek, where you have a bunch of 30-year-olds playing 16-year-olds. It's like these kids are really 12 and 13 years old, and the women are in their 30s, but they interact with them like they're, you know, anyway, it's great. And I highly, highly recommend it.
And that age is such an awkward time universally. And I think that's some of the humor too, is them being like, that guy's so hot. And then it's just some dorky 12-year-old, you know, like.
Right. And what's really funny about it, I mean, it's in the pilot, and I'm sure it's in some of the other episodes, I just don't remember, but it was so stood out to me in the pilot, is that they very effectively use the music from that time so that you'll see one of the women playing themselves at the age of 12 will be like, oh my God, Brandt is so hot. And then you'll hear like Justin Timberlake singing as she just stares at the back of his neck and is so like turned on by this this goofy doofus of a kid, you know. It's pretty brilliant. So yes, recommend. All right, well, it's time for a segment on the show that we like to call Parting Shots. And I will go first this time. We'll flip the script. Do you have your script, by the way?
I have
mine right here. You're just freestyling.
Are you word perfect?
No, but I mean, I'm not getting any cues from you.
So. I'm so sorry. You got to email me the script ahead of time or send it Messenger.
Okay, I will. I'm just going to plug another TV show. Unfortunately, that's all I have today. But a guy named Ray Stevenson, an actor, died yesterday, I guess. Young. He was young. He was only 58. And he's been in a ton of stuff. He's been around for a long time. But the way that I knew him best was from a television show on HBO called Rome. And he played a Roman soldier who just happened to be around like Julius Caesar and Mark Antony and like all those guys right at the time when
he's like the Forrest Gump of Rome.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, it was him and one other soldier, and it's their story of the years of the beginning of the Roman Empire. You know, as like. Spoiler alert, but the end of season one, not to give away the cliffhanger at the end of season one, but it's the assassination of Julius Caesar. Like that's what the whole season is leading up to. But he is fucking great in the show, and the show is great. So if you have never seen Rome, it was only two seasons, unfortunately. Kevin McKidd is the other guy. And the two of them, like I said, are just Roman legionnaires who happened to be in the right place at the right time. In fact, I think by the end of the show, the Ray Stevenson character has gotten Cleopatra pregnant. Like, he's with Mark Antony when he goes to Egypt, and he ends up sleeping with Cleopatra, and she has his kid, not, you know, somebody else's. So anyway, it's not in like a, it's done in a way that makes sense and is sort of like believable. Maybe that's a little pushed, but but the show is great, and it's very it feels very specific to the time, and sort of they definitely had like historical research involved in how they did it, and I think it's worth definitely worth a watch. Like, you know how much I love history stuff, and this show just did a great job of exploring it. And they're, you know, again, it's that thing where it's their relationship that's so interesting, and they sort of, you know, the other character sort of gets a little bit more success and becomes a low level politician, and this guy becomes sort of a criminal underlord, but they are, you know, anyway, he's a lord of some
down
sort.
Under.
Yeah, down under in the criminal overworld. it made me remember that show. And interesting side note on that show, another of my favorite shows, also a historical drama, is Deadwood, all about the town of Deadwood in what eventually became North Dakota. And apparently when David Milch went to pitch HBO his idea, he wanted to set it in ancient Rome, because his idea was, I want to do a show about how a group of people comes together and forms a community and eventually forms a government with laws and stuff. And he wanted to set it in ancient Rome. And by then they had already started developing this other show that eventually became Rome. So David Milch had to go back to the drawing board, and that was how he came up with Deadwood and made the greatest Western of all time. So rest in peace, Ray Stevenson. Parting shots, Amber.
Mine's similar. I have a recommendation. And so this weekend, Jeff and I watched Blood Simple. Have you seen Blood Simple?
The Coen Brothers movie?
Yeah, it's the Coen Brothers' first film.
Right.
And it's Frances McDormand's first film. And she looks like a little itty bitty baby. She looks like she's 12 in the year 2000. And it blew me away. Like, the Coen Brothers were always the Coen Brothers.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was going to be, I didn't know what to expect. But it is a very good movie, and I highly recommend it. They're clearly younger, and they get more polished, but like their attention to like shots and the beauty within the shots and the storytelling is so cool and fun, and it's all about misunderstandings. Like, there's a lot of elements that you see in their later movies there.
Speaking of noir, right? Isn't that sort of
yes,
a noir?
Yes.
And it's is it Dean Stockwell that's in that, or who's the
maybe?
And JT Walsh, right. I think.
And oh man, I'm blanking on his name, but he plays Cher's dad in Clueless. He's the husband.
I don't know who that is. Because I've never seen Clueless.
What? You must. You simply must. It holds up. I'm telling you. It's a good movie.
Is it J.T. Walsh or M. Emmett Walsh? It's one of the Walshes, I think. But I could be wrong, because I haven't
seen it. I'm looking it up right now.
30 because... years.
But,
Harry Dean Stanton. Who am I thinking of? God, if only I had the kind of brain that people have where they actually remember things, I would be so excited.
It's... M. Emmett Walsh was the private.
Emmett Walsh, right. J.T. Walsh is the guy who was in A Few Good Men. M. Emmett Walsh was the guy in Blood Simple.
And then Dan Hedaya? I don't know how
Dan
to say
it. Dan Hedaya from
Clueless.
The Simpsons. Oh, okay. Dan Hedaya, right. So check out the Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, they turns out they're good at, but it was almost a frustrating watch. not, but like, God, they did this right out the gate. Like, I don't know, you hear inspirational things that are like, try, like, you have to fail and then you get good and like, don't worry about it. It's like,
yeah,
they were right out the gate. It's
like,
amazing.
Like, and I think, I could be wrong about this. I'm wrong about most things, but I think maybe their next movie was fucking Raising Arizona. Like,
I think you're right.
It's insane. Crazy.
I know. Yeah.
Like, it makes me so jealous when people are like that fully formed as who they want to be.
And
right,
like, yeah. And like confident in their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I still am, but definitely at 23, 24, however old they were, I would have been like, is this okay?
Do you guys think this is a good idea?
But they're just like, no, this is what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, we all have different strengths and weaknesses, you know. Some of us mostly are just weaknesses. Mm-hmm,
weaknesses, yeah. But that's our strength.
Right.
It's that people aren't intimidated by us.
It's a very martial arts way of thinking. Yes. Use your opponents. Use your weakness. Make your weakness your strength. If that's
yes.
If your weakness is weakness, make it your strength. And if it's strength, if strength is your weakness, make it your strength.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, this has been another episode of The Long Shot. It is a podcast. You can find it on YouTube at a network. It's happier. Please comment on our YouTube and we'll read them on the show. And, you know, we appreciate everybody writing in. You know, hit the bell, ring the bell, and subscribe to the like and share. And we'll see you next time on The Long Shot.
Bye.
Oh, I have to stop it.
Well, I try my very best to be cryptic, and I think that for the most part I fail, considering the fact that I am pretty messed up from all these quarantines I've inhaled. And when I finally get around to this sleeping, I will have probably worn a hole in my pants from the blurred double vision and the red eye reduction percentages that I have been. I got out of my box, I've been faulty, and my laces have always been torn. And there's something about the way you rattle my cage that makes me wish I'd never been born. And you chose a peculiar method to say you're no longer my biggest fan. You stopped liking my jokes.